listening to Nuss Alive from Asteroid G, getting in the arena and putting on the club mix. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
Your buddy Mike the Ghoul saying, finish him, because it's time to talk about some Mortal Kombat 2, everybody.
Yeah, the new movie just came out, Mortal Kombat 2 2026, because we have to clarify, because there have been two or three other Mortal Kombat 2s over the years. Just keep revisiting that one.
Right.
So it's the sequel to the 2021 Mortal Kombat that Warner Brothers produced with New Line Cinema. And that one came out during COVID times and wasn't exactly super successful, but it was at least well received by the fans, even if it did have some weird plot points to it. It introduced a new character, Cole, that was a descendant of Scorpion that no one seemed to give a shit about. And it focused on a prelude to the Mortal Kombat tourney without actually doing the tourney, so it felt like it sat in this really weird place. But what it was supposed to do was provide action and violence and gore, and the first movie absolutely did that, so most Mortal Kombat fans were okay. It's a more mature take on it, just like the video games. Now we have Mortal Kombat 2 with Carl Urban stepping in for Johnny Cage and a bunch of our characters coming back, and I mean, I'll just spoiler it right now, it was pretty decent.
I agree. If you went into this movie, and we were talking about this, like expecting anything but a Mortal Kombat movie, like, you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah.
You just are. You're there for a reason if you're watching this movie, and if you're not, someone conned you. But if you're there to see a Mortal Kombat movie, I mean, damn, it delivered on what you wanted. I'll give it that.
You're like someone conned you, and I'm like, where's Ryan Gosling pronouncing his love for the, what's going on? Although, honestly, Ryan Gosling in a Mortal Kombat movie would be absolutely hysterical, and I would watch
wouldn't
that.
It? Oh, my goodness,
great.
Right?
That'd
right.
be
and
so
have him,
good.
Have him play Baraka or something, too, like, random, right?
He'd be a fantastic Baraka. I'm just...
Yeah. It was, no. They pulled out a lot of the nostalgia here. Mm-hmm. They hit on a lot of different notes. They had a story in there also.
More than you expect from a Mortal Kombat movie.
Yes. That didn't fall flat.
No.
To be perfectly honest. Did it detract or add anything? Not really. But it wasn't like it was in there and like, just show me someone getting killed. So.
Well, if they hadn't done any kind of story at all, then the movie would have felt like the exact same movie as the 1994 movie, which was basically, let's go to a tournament and then we fight in the tournament. And that's basically about it. This is, let's go to a tournament. And also, two of our characters learn some life lessons, Johnny Cage and Kitana, which.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, I'm good with that.
It was a fun action time. The effects were pretty cool. You get the nostalgia. You see, you know, Scorpion back, obviously. Sub-Zero in some form comes back. Noob Saibot / Smoke / Cyrax, I guess. I don't know what the fuck it was.
That was a very strange one. But you see, so we'll get into that. It is a thing, as you said. If you went into this expecting anything other than a Mortal Kombat, then you are probably going to be disappointed. And I'm seeing reviewers online doing exactly that. They're like, this was trash. It was bland. The characters didn't mean anything. There's rote performances and rote storytelling. And I'm like, did you see the thing where Kitana sliced the Emperor's head into three pieces? Like, what what were you going to a Mortal Kombat movie for? Because that was what I wanted.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you don't go to movies for the plot. And, you know, you got to go there with an expectation. And if you expect
here.
Yeah, if you expected a Mortal Kombat movie, it delivered across the board. You know, the violence was there. Mm-hmm. There were some unexpected deaths here and there, but at the same time, it's Mortal Kombat. No death is forever. So
true.
Well, they left the door open for a third movie. I'd probably go see it.
I would, yeah.
You know, if they would. They didn't have an end credit or a post credit, which is somewhat refreshing these days, to be perfectly honest. They gave you fighter select screen music and the voiceover, Johnny Cage, Sub-Zero, like, to touch that like little wrinkle in the back of your brain. They knew what they were doing, and they did it pretty well. I was impressed.
I was too.
Before we continue talking about the carnage and the excellent bloodlust that we got in this movie, we want to take a moment to thank this week's sponsor, LexCorp. The world is constantly changing. It's a new era of man and Superman, of gods and monsters. And the new era needs a new kind of leader. Lex Luthor is that man, and LexCorp is the company that will provide his solutions. He's the genius who built the corporation from the ground up and gave you so many new devices, from the Lex phone to the LexNet and even the LexPod. Because who are you going to trust? A visionary that powers your lives, or a questionable alien from another planet? LexCorp, the real superheroes. Thank you this week to our sponsor.
So the basics of the movie, it's paying off what was set up in the first film. The first one said, hey, a tournament is coming and the Emperor is going to invade. And if we don't fight this time, Earth will become part of Netherrealm. This movie at the very start says, hey, it's been 20 years since the last tournament. The Earth is going to have to battle with Outrealm. And if we don't win this time, the Emperor is going to win and take over. And you're like, okay, well, I mean, they're just reiterating the story I knew, but that's not a big deal. So then you get most of the heroes that we had the previous time.
Liu Kang, Jax, Sonya Blade, and we had Cole, the descendant of Scorpion.
Yeah.
Those were the four that returned from the first movie hero-wise. And those Raiden, of course.
And then they bring back Kano and Kung Lao, and I don't feel like I'm spoiling those because those were in the trailers. They have Katana, who's new, Jade, who's new for these movies, not for Mortal Kombat fans. Shao Kahn and
Shang Tsung,
Sindel, and Sorcerer, who's going to lead to the next villain that they have to fight, because the series can't just end with the Emperor. They always come up with some new evil guy for them to battle.
Yeah.
Basically, if you looked at a roster and go, these are cool looking fighters, and then they threw all of them in this movie, be like, here's your cool looking fighters, enjoy. They didn't hold back on that at all. Into that mix is tossed Katana, as we mentioned, and Johnny Cage. Katana is the daughter of the king of a world that was conquered by the Emperor, and in true Thanos fashion, he takes the king's daughter and makes her his own. As if that went so well for Thanos when he did it. I mean, come on, guys. Think about your plot lines here. And then we have Johnny Cage, a forced to retire 1980s action star who...
Over the hill, seen his best days, kind of forgotten in the pantheon of Saturday morning rerun movies kind of deal, you know?
Yep. And he's just looking to do something with his life. But when the tournament comes up, he's like, yeah, no, that is so not me. Except... Then they force him into it anyway, and he has to learn to fight. And even though he loses his first match, he gets to survive and continue. And he has a side mission that is key to the plot line. While functionally, Katana becomes most of our hero storyline for the main arc. She gets the big arc, he gets the B plot, and the two of them kind of power the movie. And as for Cole, spoilers, if any person was disposable, it was Cole. He dies.
Yeah. Pretty anticlimactic there. You know, you had to know something was up when he pulled Shao Kahn in the draw there.
He was dead. We all knew he was dead. Like, the second he showed up in the movie, I'm like, oh, yeah, that guy exists. I'm sure he'll die this movie. And then 30 minutes in, spoiler, he dies. It wasn't even a shock when it happened. Like, it was gory and grisly and cool, but I'm sitting there going, if anyone here is disposable, it's that fucking guy they made for the first movie.
It was something that you kind of like almost saw coming. It felt like almost a touch of, okay, fans, we heard you. You didn't like him too much as the first movie, some random hero you never heard of. So he got his time. Now let's move along and give Mortal Kombat fans what they want to see. And the hero going down was one of those moments I think we kind of all saw coming.
Like in the Hellboy movies, the first two with Ron Perlman, where they introduced a CIA agent that wasn't in the comics at all. And then when they did the second movie, that CIA agent, it was just... suddenly missing because they didn't need him because everyone was like, yeah, this sucked and this was stupid and the fans hated it. Why did we do this? Cole is that guy. He's the CIA agent we don't need. He's the Tom Sawyer inserted into the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen movie that if that movie hadn't sucked and gotten a sequel, clearly would have been removed from the movie because no one liked him. Cole was fine. I didn't hate his arc in the first movie, but when he died, I was sitting there going, wow, no one's going to make any mention of this dude at all. And after they were like, what happened to Cole? Everyone just kind of shrugs and moves on. And even his ancestor, Scorpion, makes no mention of him.
I didn't understand that from the first movie, right? Like, you bring in this new character, he's the ancestor of Scorpion. Why not just fucking bring back Scorpion? Like, then they did. And there's an arc for him as well here. I thought that was pretty cool when they go to Netherrealm and they're walking around and it's this beautiful Zen garden. And then the plot happens and it just melts away into like fucking fire and brimstone. I was like, oh, okay, I see what you're doing here. You know, if your will's strong enough, he's still got that in him. You know, he still got that dog in him too. So it was pretty cool to see that. The effects were good. I liked what they did throughout the movie.
But it does speak to the problem with Cole is the fact that the second Scorpion shows up, Cole's storyline isn't really Cole's anymore. It's Scorpion, and Scorpion has the more interesting storyline. So if you kill Cole off, it doesn't stop Scorpion from having a kick-ass storyline anyway, so why is Cole even here?
We gotta lose a couple heroes along the way, and you know, your sacrifice was appreciated. It was a good death.
You showed up, you got a paycheck. I'm happy for the actor, but Bye, Cole. Yeah. Goodbye. No one cares. You weren't even thrown into a video game, so no one gives a shit.
It's so funny. Like, the hero of the first movie got 5 minutes of screen time in this movie overall. And the best part of this movie, aside from the blood and the gore and everything, was Kano to me. Kano was just great. Oh, I loved him so much. He was awesome.
They brought him back, and they switched him from just villainous dipshit to anti-hero dipshit. And somehow it worked so much better. He stole scenes. He had good lines. He played off of Johnny Cage really well. I enjoyed Kano. I'm literally going, wow, you know, I could see more Kano in the future movies. He's fun.
It's true. Yeah. And it's funny too, because like the theater that I was in, like, had maybe, it was like a theater for like 300 people, but there was maybe like 50 of us in there.
You were there at 10 in the morning. Come on.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm making that point too. I got in an early movie. I like early movies, but like my point of this is it's a big theater. There wasn't a whole lot of us in there. When Kano was on screen doing his shit, you heard the theater laugh.
I will say, I think the small town that I'm in, even though it was a bunch of people my age, a little younger, a little older showing up, which was funny, realizing that 55 pluses are Mortal Kombat fans. And I'm sitting going, oh my God, this franchise has been around for a while.
Forever. Blood Code forever, okay? Exactly. ABACABB for the Genesis. I remember to this day.
I was laughing my ass off. My wife was laughing her ass off at this movie because it was hilarious. There were great gore moments that we were just tickled at. We were the only people in the theater laughing. I'm sitting there going, are you guys watching the same? It's the same experience I had when I was watching Fight Club. And I was like, this movie's hysterical. Why isn't everyone else laughing? I didn't understand.
That's sad to hear, kind of. Yeah. Because he's in there for the purpose of making you laugh. Like, no other reason. Kano doesn't add tremendous value to the
that
story. What he does is value.
They even dismiss that because he's brought back because he stole an amulet. And they're like, we need him to tell us where the amulet is. And he looks at him and goes, it's in my pocket. Like, did you even think to check the corpse? And everyone's like, so do we need this guy anymore? I thought that was hilarious.
That back and forth was great. He's like, it's probably in my pockets where I keep all the other shit I steal. It was great. Like, he was just funny.
He was fun. It was, and I love the fact that the villains were so inept, they didn't think to just loot the corpse first. Because they're like, now we don't need you. And they didn't give him anything to do, so he just went off and found his own thing to do. And it was, keep an eye on Kano, because he's a dipshit to everyone.
Kano is loyal to Kano. And in true Kano fashion, he was loyal to Kano.
He was loyal to Kano. It was great. They showcased so many of the characters really well, and some of their weird powers and everything else. Jade and Kitana got their weapons. They got to do their moves. Liu Kang got to do his cool fire moves and his animality. For the people that have played these games since the very first came out, there were all these nice little nods and things that worked well. And as you point out, some characters were kind of amalgamated and changed around, like Noob Saibot and Smoke were sort of combined. I didn't understand that, but I also felt like I didn't have to.
Again, it's just martial arts and fun to watch. And like, you know, there's little things in this movie that were there for the fans that you wouldn't really know unless you knew. Like when Sonya and Sindel are fighting, they're in the spike pit, which everybody knows is an iconic level from the first game. And when Shao Kahn is fighting Cole, they're in the sewer pit there. That was another level. Yeah, it was done pretty well overall. They knew what they were doing. I wouldn't say this was Deadpool Wolverine level of for the fans. This is your love letter kind of thing, but it's in that vein and it had that spirit.
And the other thing that I really liked about the movie is with all those references and everything is that it didn't take the time to point them out.
Yes.
It wasn't a smart movie, but it was smartly constructed in the way that it said, if you aren't a fan, you're just going to think this looks cool and we don't need to explain it. And if you are a fan, you understand what we're doing and we don't need to explain it. But like the Smoke and the Noob Saibot fight, they never actually named either of those characters. It was just this weird shadow clone that came out of the weird shadowy version of the character that used to be known as Sub-Zero. And they never use their character names. They just give him his actual name from the series and it just kind of is what it is. But it was cool. Then we're like, well, let's now explain why he has this new shadow power and how everything's like, fuck it, he's awesome. Throw him in there, let him dive around the stage and who gives a shit?
Exactly. Like movies sometimes fall in the trap of, you know, this was Sub-Zero and now we got to say, like, you know, he got the power of this and we got to explain that for a few minutes while we detract away from the action. Like, they didn't need to do that, and they didn't. And they didn't, which was a smart decision because you keep your people engaged when they're there to see a Mortal Kombat movie. And there was very little downtime exposition. It did fall into, like, I'm going to say the trap every now and again when it's like a serious moment, but then they make a joke, like it's not a total serious moment, but it wasn't over the top too bad. And when they joked, it was appropriate, but it did sometimes toe that line of being just like a little too on the nose trying to be funny, but it didn't break the threshold of being too much for me. Johnny Cage, Carl Urban was, you know, he was Carl Urban playing Johnny Cage. They quite literally, he was fun. He was fantastic. He had a nice little interaction with Baraka that was very cool. It kind of added a new like layer to Johnny kind of coming out of his shell, which was kind of cool because he wasn't exactly the true hero in the end. It was more so Katana, but his actions and his decisions led to them being in that position, which was cool to see him grow as well.
They were only quippy when it was a character that was meant to be quippy.
Yes.
Johnny Cage, yes. And Kano. Because there were serious moments, Katana getting betrayed by Jade, everyone discovering that Cole was dead. No one breaks out a joke. The worst I could say is that Jax made a couple of very, very mild one-liners in his fight with Jade, but it suited the character because he treads somewhere between Johnny Cage unserious and Sonya Blade serious. That's the way his character was written in the first movie. They carried it over here. And even then, his quips weren't that quippy. It wasn't like the MCU syndrome where every character has to make a joke, whether it suits their character to do so or not. Black Widow's a very serious character until the writer's like, but we need someone to break the ice. Let's have her make a bon mot. She doesn't need to do that most of the time, but they have her do it. No one here broke character to do it. You wouldn't have Raiden going, that was shocking. Like, that, you know, it wasn't. You'd expect that from the first Mortal Kombat back in 1994 when you had the Highlander making really bad quips. Raiden here doesn't do that. The movie understood its characters. It was only quippy when they had a character in place that made it. And then that was because that was what their character would do.
Yep, and that's why it wasn't too bad. Like, I do want to let people know, like, if that bothers you in movies, which sometimes it can, like, it does happen here. But it's contained and it makes sense,
which makes sense.
Is something that a Marvel movie with four times the budget doesn't do. Yeah. At least this did what it did. It did it correctly. It knew when to stop. When the fights got serious, the movie got serious in its serious kind of way. When people die, like, there were stakes, you know, people felt that, you know, and there was consequence, which made the movie serious but fun all at the same time, which is a good thing to have, especially in a Mortal Kombat movie.
When Kano makes quips, it's because he feels like he's above it all and he doesn't give a shit. When Johnny Cage makes quips, it's because he's pasting over his fragile ego and trying to make himself look more interesting than he did. Liu Kang speaks, he never makes one joke. He's serious, he's focused. Yeah. He's the Ryu of the Mortal Kombat movies. He knows what he's doing and he's there to do a job. I never felt like Katana was going to come up and go, I'll fan you or something. Like, no, it doesn't.
Yeah.
The movie knew what it was doing. And I appreciate that. It had its humor when it needed it. It had its violence pretty much all the fucking time because it's Mortal Kombat. And it knew how to stay to its lane. This was a movie that said, fans of Mortal Kombat are looking for something specific. We're going to stay to our lane.
Yeah. And they knew what they were doing and they nailed it. I hope this movie is successful because it should be. This is a movie that should make double, even triple its money back if the fans get the right word and go see it. Because this is one, like, you go into so many of these movies and you get disappointed. They try to be too much. They're too little. I'm not saying this movie's perfect by any means, but like if you go in there and just expect what you want to see, like you're going to see what you want to see from the very beginning of the movie with the fight. Like, you know that this guy's going to die. Because it has to happen, but they almost gave you a second. Like, is he gonna really? No. They Game of Thrones us with Oberyn Martell there. They fucking nailed us, but it gave consequence and stakes to the story that needed to happen for Katana's arc. And it wasn't like just kind of injected in there as a plot point, which, you know, is good in a movie that's basically just about a fucking fighting video game from 30 years ago.
Yeah, this movie basically says, okay, we have Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3. It had all these characters, it had all these storylines, it had all this going on. Let's take that game and make it the main tournament for the film that we're doing. And then they filmed it, and it worked exactly as the way that fans of the old Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis games were looking for. Nothing more, nothing less. If you were like the reviewers from the AV Club or other websites like that that were sitting there going, well, you know, this was an unserious movie and I was expecting cinema. The fuck were you doing going to Mortal Kombat anyway? Come on.
Yeah, you people, if that's you, you are the reason that movies like this that are actually shit movies that are good are not given the due they deserve, because this is a grimy, dirty movie for people from 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. And we should go see it because this movie shows a good journey from where the first one was, the campiness, the goofiness of that first one that had its touch of violence, to this movie, which is what we wish we saw 30 years ago with like the effects and everything. And it did it well.
Right before the movie came out, they put out one more teaser trailer to try and get people to buy tickets. And it was basically just the footage from the movie where the characters pop in, stitched with the club mix of the theme song, where, as you said, the names are just like Kung Lao, Kitana.
Yeah.
That was literally it. That was the entire 45-second teaser spot. And it sold the movie better than anything else I saw. I liked the trailers before. It sold it better because I'm like, well, these people know exactly what we're looking for. We're just wanting to see the video game in movie form. This isn't deep, guys.
It's not. Well, when I was there, I saw the previews for Street Fighter again, which, I mean, you look at that, and that looks like what Mortal Kombat is, but, I mean, take it up another goofy level, with Street Fighter. But again, like, that feels like it's going to take the world of Street Fighter and give some of the fans a movie they wish they had seen before that never really got a chance to. They got star power in there and everything. This movie did the same thing, right? We had Carl Urban, Hiroyuki Sanada, the actor who played Scorpion, like a fantastic actor in his own right. Like, you know that face. So like, they have star power in this movie. And it was, you know, not that mega love letter to the fans, but this is definitely a wink, a nod, and a shove that, like, hey, we get you. Go see this because you are going to be happy with the product we're putting forward. And I think if you go see it as a fan, you will feel that.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. This was exactly the movie that fans wanted. It's the one that we either wanted for the 1994 one or the sequel for the 1994 one that we deserved to get. It provides all the characters, all the fights, all the violence, just enough silliness and fun, doesn't take itself too seriously, doesn't verge towards self-parody, which I'm worried the Street Fighter movie is going to do. It hit that sweet spot fans were looking for, and then it decided to go home. It was like, I did it. I did my job. Let's wander off. And it was perfect for what it wanted. It's not a perfect movie because it's still a silly Mortal Kombat movie. For that Mortal Kombat movie you're looking for, it was perfection for its specific genre.
Completely 100% agree. When I saw the movie, I texted you the gif of Michael Fassbender and perfection. Like, that's what this was. Like, is it a perfect movie? No. Is this a perfect Mortal Kombat movie? In my opinion, if it's not, it's pretty damn close.
Chef kiss for Mortal Kombat. You know what you want from the title. If you expect anything less or anything more, you're not going to get that. It is Mortal Kombat to a T, and that's it.
Yep, and it's exactly what you want, and it's exactly what you get. And if you go into it with that expectation, you're going to come out happy and pleased.
You're going to be very happy. This has been Not So Live from Asteroid G, taking dudes and punching them right off into the spike pit. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
Your buddy Mike the Ghoul here going to say, fatality, toasty!
I forgot about that one. I'm sitting there going, what other dumb ones are there? Fatality! No, we're good.
Toasty!
We will see you all next time.